Welcome to Parents' Perspective. You know, Barbara was looking over the roster for her fourth grade class. I must have misplaced Mrs. Brown's home number. When I call, I keep getting different adults who say they're taking messages. But she never calls back. I must be getting her office. Not necessarily. Her colleague Donna looked up from grading her class's papers. You see, that family lives in a shelter. Oh, my goodness! Barbara's jaw dropped. I had no idea. I mean, Henry always has his homework done, and he comes into class clean and neatly dressed each day.
Yeah, remarked Tom, a sixth-grade teacher. His sister Louise is one of my top students. She has to get her studying done somewhere. It sure would be too much for me to be uprooted like that.
But she's obviously a good example for her younger brother, Donna observed. Their mom must be something.
Well, she certainly has resilient kids, added Barbara. I'm glad conferences are coming up. Now I'm really looking forward to meeting her.
From a parent's perspective, what should we know about resilient children, and how can we foster resiliency in our youngsters? I'm Sandy Burt. Linda Perlis could not be with us today. Our guest researches, writes, and speaks on the topic of resiliency. Dr. Edith Grotberg is a psychologist who has been involved in issues concerning the well-being of children, both as a professor and as a director of research in the Administration for Children, Youth, and Families in the Department of Health and Human Services of the federal government. She was increasingly concerned that most of our attention was on what was wrong with children and families and not on what was strong, helpful, and enriching. That led her to studying the concept of resilience. She is the author of several books, How to Deal with Anything, Tapping Your Inner Strength, A Guide to Promoting Resilience in Children, and newly published, Resilience for Today. She has three children, a son and two daughters, and three young grandchildren, with another on the way. Welcome to Parents' Perspective, Dr. Grotberg.
Thank you. It's a delight to be here, and particularly around this topic, which is becoming so important in our culture.
What do we mean when we talk about children who are resilient?
Well, we're talking about a human capacity that we all have, every human being has. It's the human capacity to face, deal with, overcome, be strengthened by, or even transformed by experiences of adversity. Terror, war, illness, death, failure in school, all the adversities that are inevitable in all of our lives. It's the ability to deal with that.
This is a huge list for children to be able to overcome. Have you found any thread that goes through this that you can say, ah, yes, if there's this?
Yes, definitely. If a individual or a group or a country has supports around it. Let's focus on a child. They have the support of loving parents, a trusting relationship with parents and other people, a role model or role models for how to behave, people who want them to become autonomous, and people who set limits for them. Those are the external supports that children need in order to become resilient.
Now, do they need to have all of this, or can they have some of this?
They can have some of this, but they must have trusting relationships. That is the basic need of all human beings, to have trusting relationships. Loving trusting would be more in the family and where the emotional connections are. But to have trusting relationships is basic to human growth and development. For example, you take a street kid, a teenager, and we've worked with them, and they don't trust anybody, and with good reason. They've been exploited. Many of them are prostitutes, and to build trust in them is first before you can help them at all. And we have a story about that, which I can give you. I was running a workshop with people who work with these street children. And the one woman indicated that she always had, at the same time every day, a table out on the street with food on it. And so the children would come, the street kids, and they start, you know, age 7 and 8, up through the teens.
Are we talking about in the United States?
No, we're not, but it could happen here as well. It's the same idea. There's absolutely no difference in the idea. So she had this every single day, and they would come because they were hungry. And over months, she was reliable. They could trust that she would be there. One boy kept coming all the time, who was about 15. And finally she said to him, "You know, I could help you get out of this and get you onto a career, some kind of work that you could enjoy." And his response was, "Don't bother about me. Help my brother and sister who are still in that situation." And she said, "What a wonderful human being you are, that you care so much about your sister and brother." And he was so stunned at this. No one ever told him he was good at about anything. He was being beaten and abused and thrown out of the house. And clearly the brother and sister were having the same thing. So she said, "I will make sure that they are taken care of, but I want to help you too." So he trusted her, and she did help them resolve the problem. They got the other two out of the home, and she got him into computers. Now, you don't necessarily have to have role models, although the younger you are, the more you need role models.
Why is that?
Because they tell you how to deal with problems. You see how they're doing. A good example of that is a study that was done of people who were moved physically from a war-torn area to another area, but it took them from the mountains and fields and farms to the edge of a city. And here they studied the behavior of the parents. One group of parents only thought about the past. They wanted to go back to the mountains. They were not happy at this place. They moaned and they were very depressed. Their children had behavioral problems. They didn't go to school. They were depressed. There was a lot of tension within the family. Another group of parents saw opportunities in this new location. They could get jobs. Their kids could go to school, which they had not been able to do in the mountains. They had better schools. They had better resources. The parents could get work to help the family. They were optimistic about the future. They would think every once in a while about the past and long for it, but they didn't hang on to that. They didn't persist in that. And so they moved along. Their children were resilient. Their children were doing well in school. Their children were happy. Their children were making connections with other children. They were benefiting from the new experience. So role modeling is very, very critical. And parents start role modeling from the day the infant is born.
Frightening, isn't it?
It's a challenge, and I'm convinced that families are the frontier of the future, that they are the ones who create what culture's where culture's going to go, where society is going to go.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to continue our discussion on resiliency in children.
Washington, D.C. with Kids, an excellent book by authors Sandy Burt and Linda Perlis, is available at all major bookstores and on the web.
Welcome back to Parents' Perspective. We are talking with Dr. Edith Grotberg about resiliency in children. Now that all of us as parents are thinking about how we're doing and so forth, do children respond to parental change? For example, if you have a parent who hasn't had a very positive attitude but who wants to change, do children respond to a change in parental behavior or attitude?
I'm sure they would, because children want so much to have connections with their parents. They are so desperate for it. They will accept a mother or a father who's a drug addict because they love them. I worked with one young lady whose mother was an alcoholic. But her daughter loved her, cared for her, and accepted this. She had outside friends. She had people at school. She had people around her, relatives around her. But she loved her mother. And, you know, parents who abuse their kids, the kids love them. It's because their need is so great to be connected. And that's something we need all of our lives. We need connections, emotional connections.
You know, there's a myth, I think, that we all have heard and some of us subscribe to, that kids are born resilient. But it sounds like that's not exactly the case.
No, it is absolutely. We're all born with a capacity, because we all have the capacity to be resilient, but we aren't full-fledged resilience. Let me go on with what other things they need. Everybody needs internal strengths, and that is having empathy and caring for other people.
And that is something that you see modeled rather than something that you get born with, right?
Empathy starts very young. As a matter of fact, a year and a half old child who is crying and you hold it and pat on the shoulder, it starts patting you. And a baby will cry in response to another baby's cry. There is empathy. No, it's there. It has to be developed, that you care about other people. And this is the value of having a dog or something, that the children learn how to care for others and care for themselves. And then another inner strength is respect for others and self. Now, a young infant can't deal with that, but starting at age 3 and 4, children have to respect. They have to respect limits of behavior. They have to respect they're hurting someone else. They have to respect themselves. They don't let people push them around. So they need respect. And then they also need interpersonal and problem-solving skills. They know how to share thoughts and feelings with others. They know how to reach out for help. They know how to solve problems. They know how to use the services and that kind of thing. So those are, I call it, I have the inner, I have supports, I am the inner strengths, and I can solve problems and engage in interpersonal relationships.
Now, do you feel that all three of these areas can be developed in children at all stages, or some of them are for younger stages and some of them are for older stages?
No, they're very much tied in with development. And the first level of development is trust. And that's the first year of life. And then we move into autonomy, which is the second and third year of life, where children are learning to do what they're doing and do it on their own without parental interference. The word N-O, no, is a very revealing word. They're saying, no, I will not do that. They are aware they are separate from the other person. But at that stage, they are also ready to develop some empathy. They're going to be autonomous, more autonomous now, more independent now, but now they have some responsibilities. So then, and they're willing, if they have the trust, they're willing now to accept some limits to their behavior. And they're also willing to appreciate when they have hurt someone or when someone has hurt them and complain about it or, you know, cry, whatever message they give us that they're unhappy.
Is it at that point, too, that we can teach them how to make amends for what the behavior is? In other words, how to not exactly fix things,
yeah,
but how to affect things in a way that would help them then feel stronger inside?
Well, you can talk to them about that. I think it's a little early. I think here the setting of limits. No, we don't do that. You never label the child by saying you're being cruel, you're a cruel person, because they'll believe you. The next stage, which is initiative, which is 4 and 5, that's where children initiate behavior, they initiate ideas, they initiate activities. And there you would want now to talk with them about the consequences of what they have done. Now their brain is developed a little more so they can handle that. You can't expect a 3-year-old to solve problems, but a 4 and 5 can begin to understand some consequences of their behavior. And then your 6 to 12, 11-year-old, they're very busy acquiring skills, and they're very busy solving problems. So that's a very critical time for them to recognize a problem, to begin to solve it with help when they need it, but on their own when they can, to understand more now about peer relationships, with other children and their responsibility to them. So they can accept a deeper, richer understanding of what they do does to other people.
That's sort of the beginning of the community service push in our schools, I think, too.
Exactly.
Around middle school.
Exactly. Yes, you wouldn't do that in kindergarten. Some kids could handle it, but it's more a elementary school. And then your teens, which is developmentally, they're at the stage of identity, and they're trying to find, who am I? Where am I going? But it's very critical, because now they're at the stage where they're beginning to pull away a little bit from the family. Their peer group gets very important, and everything is comparing with their peer group, which is going to be their future colleagues. You know, this is their society coming. It's being built now. And now you're dealing with intelligence. They have analytical skills. They're much more critical of things, and we need to respect that. And they need increasing independence, and they need a lot of role modeling and still a lot of connections with the family as they move out to other things. I was talking to a man the other day, and he said, you know, my kids don't listen to me when I tell them to stop doing this. I said, yes, they do.
They just don't do it.
They hear you. And that keep talking to them. They hear you. They
Isn't
hear you.
That interesting? Mm-hmm. There are some very, very powerful ads about non-smoking and drugs and so forth that say things like, it's okay, they are listening.
Yes, they are listening. Mm-hmm. And parents, I know they feel very upset with many teenagers, but they need to renegotiate rules, they need to renegotiate expectations, they need to re-examine their treatment of the teenager. These kids are becoming adults, and, you know, we're maturing earlier and earlier, and so they need to renegotiate a lot, and a lot of parents are fearful of doing that. They're afraid they're going to lose control. Well, you have to begin to let go of the control, but you renegotiate. Yes, you can stay out now till 10. It used to be 8 or whatever. Yes, and why? Explain why you're doing what you're doing, why you have these rules, why you are concerned about this and that. And the cell phone is one of the most marvelous things that's happened. It is connectedness that is just fabulous. My grandchildren have cell phones, and they call me, they call their dad, they call their mother, they call around. It's a wonderful way to keep connected. And with our very complex society, we need to keep those basic connections that we have with family, with friends. And it's very important.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to finish our discussion on resiliency in children.
For an audio cassette copy of any Parents Perspective show, send a check or money order for $5 with your name, address, and phone number to Parents Perspective, P.O. Box 42283, Washington, D.C., 20015.
Welcome back to Parents Perspective. We are talking with Dr. Edith Grotberg about resiliency in children. What about teachers in this whole mix trying to help, especially children that they perceive as maybe not having all the ingredients for resilience?
It can be promoted in the classroom quite easily. Children can share a discussion of what's happened that's made them unhappy. We do this in a lot of schools. We give them a situation of adversity and ask them, what would you do if this happened?
What about when kids become young adults? How can we help promote the resilience when they're out there getting battered by the wide world? How can we help them?
Well, one way is always be there for them and always be available to them, you know, as soon as you can, obviously. But talk to them about it. And a lot of it is planning for adversities. And if you know you're going to be doing an interview, for example, if you know you're going to be in a competition, for example, you can talk with your parents about what might happen and how would you deal with that, and draw on the resilience factors, like keeping your self-confidence. Don't lose faith and hope. believe you can get through this and you will come out okay.
Which means that the parent or the coach or the teacher, whoever's dealing with the young adult, also has to truly believe in the person, because it's a truism that kids at whatever age can sort of see through.
Oh,
if you don't.
Oh, you bet they can. They can spot a phony. Yeah, but just saying, I know you can get through this. I know you have the ability. If you need any help, call on me, but I know you can do it. And have the faith and confidence in them as they do in themselves, which is another inner strength that kids need. And a lot of people draw on religion here, and that is a source of faith, mm-hmm. and belief in oneself.
Short of seeing a child in an environment of poverty or neglect, how can we tell if a child is resilient? You see lots of children come into a classroom, they all seem perfectly fine.
Well, that's an interesting question, because the history of resilience is we learned about it from poor children. What they were looking for was the impact of environment on a child's development, and soon, because the parents were, many of them were psychotic, depressed, dysfunctional in many, many ways, you know, drunks and all that kind of thing, they thought that this would obviously impact on the child. But they found about a third of the children were doing just fine. And that's what led them to analyze, what do these children have? What are they doing? And it was reaching out for help. It was having good role models. It was finding a teacher who guided them, or a minister or a pastor. It was the resilience factors that I pointed out to you.
So it sounds to me like one of the things we need to remember as adults in a community is every child needs some adult to really reach out and care, so we need to have our radar up. One of the burdens I think parents must really have is, in an era when we're having people who are not only in the military professionally, but people who are in the reserves deployed, and all kinds of changes going on in families like that, parents must have a very hard time promoting resiliency in their children.
It's very difficult for them, because we're living in a very dangerous world. There's a lot of terrorism, there's a lot of war, a lot of violence in the communities. And parents have to cope with this and help their children deal with it. You can't build a wall against the world, but you have to make the children feel very safe and that you're there for them. Call me on cell phone, or come home as quickly as you can. I'm there for you. I will always help you on these things. Yes, it is dangerous, but we can deal with it. And this is what we'll plan to do. It's planning for things that might happen, and that's a very important thing.
So if a parent is going to be deployed overseas, for example, then the parent who's remaining or the caregiver who's remaining needs to sit down with the child and explain what the plan is?
Yes, and not frighten them, but let them understand they're safe, that you will be there for them. They can call you, they can come home, they can share what they're feeling about what's happening. They can get prepared that it might happen and how to avoid those things. And you don't want to scare them, but the home is safe. We will protect you, and we will do everything we can to protect you when you go out, or we'll go with you. You don't want them to become frightened that they can get to school. That, you know, actually things don't happen to most people. It happens to a very, very small percentage. But the children get shaken, as our sniper attack here scared so many of us, and people in the school as well as in the homes. But the home is safe. We will come and get you. We will be with you. We will take care of you, and we'll get through this. It's that kind of confidence.
Unfortunately, our time is growing short, and we need to be sure to leave everyone listening with some resources that you would suggest for pursuing the topic further.
The American Psychological Association has done pamphlets on the road to resilience, and even have a couple of publications directly to children and another to teachers, teaching the fourth R, resilience. And these can be found by going on the website helping.apa.org. That's American Psychological Association, and they have one called The Road to Resilience, and then they have Resilience. Now, they focus on in time of war, but actually what they have recommended, and this is for preschool children, elementary school children, teen teachers and middle school children and parents of teens and teachers of teens, but also one for teens themselves. And these can be downloaded free of charge. As a matter of fact, the man who was responsible for this was our keynote speaker at our last International Council of Psychologists conference, of which I'm president.
Aha, so you know he's a good guy.
I know he's a good guy.
And we want to be sure to mention your books, How to Deal with Anything, Tapping Your Inner Strength, A Guide to Promoting Resilience in Children, and the newly published Resilience for Today.
You can download A Guide to Promoting Resilience in Children by going on the website ResilNet, ResilNet, .uiuc.edu.
Okay, ResilNet, uiuc.edu.
Yeah.
And you can just download the
whole
thing?
Yeah, and it's only 60-some pages, and you can download it free. With the American Psychological Association, these can also be downloaded free. We want to make sure people have access.
Dr. Edith Grotberg, we are so grateful for you to have come here today and helped us to understand a little bit more about resilience in children and how we can help to promote it. Thanks so very much.
Thank you. I've enjoyed it. It's been fun.
Our gift for our first caller is an autographed copy of our latest book, Washington, D.C. with Kids. Just call us toll-free at 1-800-791-8573 with your name and mailing address. That's 1-800-791-8573 with your name and mailing address and mention show number 201. Tell us if you can what station you're listening to. Since we're airing all over the world, it's always fun to know what station you're tuning into. Washington, D.C. with Kids is available at all major bookstores and on the web. To learn more about us and our book, Washington, D.C. with Kids, visit our website, http://i.am/parentsperspective, all one word. This is Sandy Burt. Linda Perlis will be back with us next week. We're glad you could share Parents' Perspective. Our sound engineer is Damon Fisher. Music for this program was composed and performed by Jonathan Burt.